Welcome to today's presentation on the impact of hormones on male and female immune systems. The presenter who will be leading our discussion today is Dr. Felice Gersh. Dr. Felice Gersh is a rare combination of an award-winning physician, board certified both in OBGYN and in integrative medicine. Her educational background includes an undergraduate degree from Princeton University, a medical degree from the University of Southern California School of Medicine, and a two-year fellowship in integrative medicine at the University of Arizona School of Medicine. Dr. Gersh has dedicated her career to women, focusing on the aspects of women's health, which are unique, underappreciated, and poorly managed. She is the medical director of the Innovative Integrative Medical Group of Irvine, leading her team of skilled holistic practitioners. Dr. Gersh is sought after national and international speaker, a published writer of book chapters, and a prolific blogger. She has been featured on numerous web summits, podcasts, and radio shows, and has her own segment, A Healthy Perspective, heard weekly on the Los Angeles AM radio, KRLA 870. Her first book on PCOS will be available late 2018. And with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Gersh to begin the content portion of today's webinar.
Thank you so much, Kate. It's such a pleasure to be here and talking about a topic that is so another one of those underappreciated topics. I came of age in the 1970s when the first beginnings of feminism arose. And that was the very beginning of the idea that men and women are all the same. We are so different, though. I mean, I'm totally like everyone else in favor of complete equality when it comes to employment opportunities and salaries, but we are so different. And that's what we're going to talk about this afternoon, the tremendous differences in our immune systems. And immune systems, we now know, are really fundamental to every single aspect of the body. It's not just about fighting off a cold. It's so much more. It's the communication system between all of the organs. What we're going to cover is a great deal. And because we have somewhat limited time, we're going to touch on a whole group of things. And hopefully I will inspire you to want to learn much more. We're going to cover the foundational differences between the two sexes in terms of how the immune system functions, and of course, how this relates to clinical care. We're going to talk about estrogen's immense impact and influence on the immune system, and of course, how that has implications for the diseases that are showing great sexual disparity. And we're going to look at how we can work to optimize health through optimizing the health of the gut microbiome, the circadian rhythm, and other functional things involving female health so that we can really make a difference and help all of our women patients to have optimal health and optimal immune homeostasis. The most important thing that is going to really impact on how you think about everything that's female is understanding what the prime directive of life is, whether or not you want to buy into it or not. The prime directive of life is about reproduction. And as you know from the introduction, I'm a board certified OBGYN. And so my foundation was in the reproductive functions of women. But it turns out that everything in the body is about supporting reproductive function. And that means survival, because having a female become pregnant and deliver a baby is just the beginning. Of course, she needs to survive the pregnancy and the delivery, but then she needs to be around. She needs to be alive so she can breastfeed and raise that child to the point of being able to take care of himself or herself, and then be able to reproduce again, to repeat the process. And because humans have to replace themselves, it requires many years and many children. That gives women a long reproductive life. And they need to survive to take care of those children for the duration of that time. So everything about the immune system is designed to allow reproduction to be successful and for women to survive. Now, this has created quite a difference between the two sexes, because females have developed a much more responsive and robust immune system compared to males. Now, why would that be? Well, it turns out that humans, like all species, have limited amounts of energy, and we have to use that energy responsively in order to secure the prime directive of life, which is reproduction and survival for the purpose of reproduction. So it turns out that women, in order to survive, to actually get through pregnancy, to actually live for years, to raise those children, they need to have a more responsive immune system. They need to be able to weather illness. They need to be able to survive infections at a higher rate than males. Now, this is not to downplay the importance of males. I don't want you out there, if you're a male, to think that we don't think you're very important. But reality is that because there's limited energy to go around, females spend a great deal of their energy developing this robust immune system for the purpose of survival and reproduction. And think about it as well. Women have to have immune systems that can go through menstrual cycles, they can get through pregnancies. After all, women are exposed to aliens, right? Sperm coming in through the vagina, and these alien creatures called babies with different genetics and different DNA living within them. So their immune systems have to be different than males. Males use a great deal of their energy to be larger, to have strong muscles and bigger bones so that they can actually do more of the heavy lifting. They also need to be able to produce a lot of sperm, and that takes a lot of energy. So nature divided up how we use our energy, and we females have a different responsive and robust immune system to allow us to survive regardless of hopefully what comes our way in terms of illness. Unfortunately, think of it this way. If you had, say, an epidemic, it's more important for the females to survive than all the males, because the survival of the species could continue if you had, say, 6 fertile females and 1 fertile male. So nature just really pushes to have females survive. But when things go wrong, the female immune system can become more aggressively self-damaging. We are more aggressively producing self-antigens. We respond to them more. And we are therefore more susceptible to autoimmune diseases and also to cancers of our reproductive organs. So it turns out that estrogen, which is the master hormone of females, is active throughout the entire immune system through both estrogen receptor dependent and estrogen independent in terms of the receptor mechanisms, because there are alternative ways that estrogen can impact tissue besides just through the estrogen receptors. We actually have things called estrogen-related receptors, where something else is the ligand, something else is binding to the receptor, but in order for it to work, you need to have estrogen present. Because of the differences between the two types of immune systems of males and females, as I mentioned, females are more susceptible to autoimmune diseases. In fact, 80% of autoimmune diseases occur in females. And as you can see from the listing, those are some of the ones that are very most pronounced for a female predisposition. And this is, of course, now becoming an epidemic as circumstances are changing and the female immune system is being, you might say, corrupted by environmental toxins, circadian rhythm dysfunction, and gut microbiome dysbiosis to create this avalanche, this epidemic of autoimmune diseases that are occurring in women. If we look at male and female immune systems, as I mentioned, they are quite different. Now, unfortunately, as I mentioned, I grew up and sort of came to maturity during the 1970s when it became, well, you know, women and men are the same. You know, we had equality. That was just the beginnings. And unfortunately, in scientific medical research, they did not distinguish between males and females among the study subjects. So we actually had very little data to understand what was going on immunologically in terms of differences between the two sexes. Fortunately, that is now changing, and there's more awareness and research looking at the differences between male and female immune systems. We know that, as I mentioned, this is about survival. So humans are part of the animal kingdom, and these sex-based immunological differences are not unique to humans, but are present in many other life forms, like insects and lizards and so forth, other mammals, because they are also about survival. And it becomes imperative for survival for there to be differences between males and females in terms of their immune systems. Now, if we look at what are some of the foundational differences driven by, it's, as I listed, X chromosomes, and not just having genetics, but epigenetics, how the genes are expressed. They vary as well between the two sexes. Hormones, of course, are quite different. And as it'll turn out, as you'll see, the microbiomes of males and females are different. And their circadian rhythm is critically important to immune health. And age and reproductive status is also a very big deal. Now, because of time limitations, we can't dwell for too much time on any of these, but we're going to touch on all of them. Men and women have different genes. Women, of course, are double X, and men are XY. It turns out that the X chromosome has about 1,100 genes, and many of them are involved with the functions of the immune system. One of the X chromosomes is randomly silenced in women, but it turns out that about 15% of the genes do not get silent, and these have a large impact on the immune function of women and how it differs from men. It turns out that there are many immunological genes located on the sex chromosomes, and because of the differences, females have more robust pattern recognition receptor genes. Now, what does this mean? It means that the immune cells that recognize patterns, for example, toxins and antigens from pathogens, the female receptors are more receptive. There's more of them, and they recognize these patterns of pathogens more than males do. Females have more cytokine receptor genes, more transcriptional factor genes. They make more of the cytokines, for example. They make more of the proteins and enzymes, and they have differences in non-coding DNA regions. It turns out that the chromosomes actually have a great deal to do with the immunological differences. When you take the hormones out of the picture, if you take animals and you stop them from having estrogen or testosterone, then you actually find that there is still a difference in the genetics. It's not just about the hormones. So the hormones, which that's my greatest love, is learning and teaching about hormones, but it's not just about the hormones. It's actually about the genes that act independently, not even considering the hormones. Now, gene expression is also different. It turns out that when they looked at mice, that there were over 8,000 genes that were expressed differently between the two sexes. And these include such cells as the T cells and mast cells, so it's including the innate and the adaptive immune systems. This is really important as well, involving DNA methylation status, which I'm sure you know has been very trendy lately, talking about the issues of methylation. Well, the way the genes are expressed changes how DNA methylation occurs. And this is very critical as well for the chromatin structure, for gene expression. So these are all major issues and differences between men and women, is how the genes get expressed. Now, some of this gene expression difference is due to the genes themselves, and some of it is due to the hormones. So if we look at some of the genes that are expressed differently, we can look at mast cells. So mast cells are part of the innate immune system. They are the first responders. Mast cells are very fascinating. They are the only cells that contain pre-made cytokines. Like, they contain tumor necrosis factor alpha and other inflammatory products, and they are ready and waiting to explode. and release their inflammatory contents if what they perceive as an invader shows up on the scene. Mast cells line all the interfaces between the body and the external world. So all the different membrane systems from the mouth through the lungs into the gut, the female vagina, the skin, and so forth, all have mast cells, and also the blood-brain barrier. So mast cells are there to protect us, and females have more robust gene expression on mast cells. If we look at the mast cells, for example, they have higher expression of genes involving metabolic pathways. They are more energy producing. The female mast cells are essentially more energetic, and they produce more of the, for example, tumor necrosis factor alpha. It turns out that those genes are differentially expressed on female mast cells. So female mast cells contain more of these inflammatory cytokines, including tumor necrosis factor alpha. So a female mast cell is not the same as a male mast cells. And this translates into a higher rate of allergic reactions and more severe allergic reactions in females. And as most of you, I'm sure, know, the emotional state of a person can express with an immune reaction. For example, irritable bowel syndrome, which is much, much higher in females than males, and has a great deal to do with mast cells along with other immune cells. So the state of psychological well-being of a woman, as well as her environmental exposures, will all manifest quite differently and more severely in females. Of course, you know, males and females have different hormones, and estradiol acts on every single cellular component of the immune system, both through estrogen receptors and through independent mechanisms. If we look at the immune system directly, we find that females have higher levels of toll-like receptors. Now, the toll-like receptors are the parts of the cell, of the immune cells, that can recognize and bind to things like antigens, to things like lipopolysaccharides and so forth, particles of dead tissue. So these are part of the sensory system of the immune cells. I think of it as sort of our own internal brand of antenna that we can then sense what's going out there, toxins and so forth. And females have more of these. Women have less activity of the NF-kappa B system, and estrogen actually downregulates it. Think of estrogen as a modulator of the immune system, and it actually downregulates NF-kappa B. But as we'll see in a few moments, it is level dependent. The amount of estrogen does have a lot to do with how the immune system works. Estradiol increases dendritic cell activation. The dendritic cells are the interface cells that we'll talk about more between the innate and the adaptive immune system. So they have a lot of toll-like receptors. They see what's going on. They have little fingers that actually pass through the tight junctions of the enterocytes of the gut, and they actually see what's going on within the gut lumen. And then they relay this information back to other innate immune cells, and then as well goes to the adaptive immune cells, to the TMB cells, so that they can then do their jobs to help protect the body. And females have a more, we'll say, robust surveillance system with higher levels of dendritic cell activation. So they are more like just more surveilling. They're looking at what's going on. Women's immune systems are more aware of what's happening than male immune systems. Females have higher numbers of neutrophils, and they will degranulate more readily. Females have higher levels of interferon production, which of course is very involved in protecting against viral infections by natural killer cells. Males actually have more natural killer cells than females, but the female natural killer cells actually are more robust in their function. Females have more B cells and higher production of antibodies than do males, which of course translates into, when things go wrong, higher levels of autoimmunity. Testosterone actually suppresses immune cell activity. And you might think, why on earth would people have evolved so that males, the main hormone of the male, the testosterone, would suppress immune cell activity. It's all about how you spend your energy. As I mentioned, females have to stay alive to raise their children, to be able to survive a pregnancy, delivery, and all the potential infections that can come from delivering a baby and so on, postpartum infections, and then get through and not have, you know, serious infections from breastfeeding or other things. Females must survive to raise the children, whereas males need to be able to procreate with females. They need to mate and they need to help protect and get food and so forth. But you don't need as many males to keep children around to their level of maturity so that they can then reproduce themselves. So the body suppresses the immune system of the male through testosterone so that they can spend their energy elsewhere. And indirectly, estradiol supports the immune system through the different microbiomes of the body. And there, we now know that estrogen has a big part in all the different microbiomes, everything from the vaginal, the mouth, the gut, and so forth, and the circadian rhythm, which now we know is enormously important in immune function. So I want to briefly introduce you to my favorite hormone, estrogen. Estrogen is not just one hormone. It comes in different forms, estrone, estradiol, and estriol. And this is somewhat oversimplified, but it shows you that they have different receptors. They come from a little bit different sources. Estriol is the dominant hormone produced by the placenta in pregnancy. And as you see at the bottom there under receptor, estriol is all estrogen receptor beta. And we'll look at and see what that means soon. Estradiol is a blend of the two. And we're going to talk about there's more to it than just that. And estradiol is the dominant hormone, the estrogen produced by the ovary during the reproductive years. And estrone, which is in an equilibrium with estradiol, and estriol is also a byproduct of the other estrogens, and is so forth, and is present in women of all ages. But like I said, it's the dominant one of pregnancy. And estrone is predominantly estrogen receptor alpha and is often made in adipose tissue and elsewhere through aromatization, but it's also in equilibrium, but in smaller amounts compared to estradiol. But they both exist in reproductive aged women. But after menopause, estrone becomes more dominant. So there are three types of receptors, alpha, beta, and membrane. And we did not know this too many years ago. This is relatively new information. We used to think that the alpha and beta were only nuclear receptors, and therefore they worked on the nuclear genes, and that would create transcription of a protein, which is a rather slow process. But now we know that they not only have nuclear receptor functions, they actually also work on the membranes. It's much more complicated than we thought, and everything is usually more complicated than we think. There are also strictly membrane receptors, and what happens with the membrane receptors is that they have very rapid effects. They create kinases and very rapid cellular signaling processes. And it turns out that the different receptors interact with each other and can actually up and down regulate each other. It's very complex. And it turns out that high estrogen receptor beta will down regulate the alpha receptor. And think about this for just a moment. I mentioned in pregnancy that the dominant estrogen is estriol, which is all beta. So when you have high beta, you're going to downregulate alpha. And we'll see in a few moments why that can be very helpful in pregnancy and perhaps as a tool for certain autoimmune diseases, which we want to downregulate alpha. And there has been some research with multiple sclerosis that giving estriol may be beneficial. So if we look again at the hormones and the immune system, you can see that estrogen is involved in every single organ of the body. And think about it this way. I already told you the prime directive of life is reproduction and survival so that the offspring will live long enough so that they become of age and that they can then reproduce and carry on and carry on from there, hopefully forever, right? So that's the circle of life. And that is the main mission of nature, that we have kids and that they have kids, and it goes on and on. But in order for a human to survive, for a female to survive, she needs a healthy body. So of course, estrogen is not just involved in reproduction, it's involved in every single function of the female body, and it's all beautifully coordinated. So metabolic health and reproductive health and immune health are all one in the female. And that's why there are estrogen receptors in every single organ of the female body. And by the way, just as a side note to the males, males need estrogen too. Males use a lot of estrogen for many of the same functions that females do, but they have, of course, a different ratio with lots of testosterone. Males make estrogen on site in many, many different organs through paracrine effects. That's when you make the hormone for local use within that organ itself, whereas females do that as well, but also make estrogen, of course, in the ovaries during the reproductive years, and they make less as a paracrine and less in the different organs. And after menopause, the organs that make estrogen do not pick up the slack. That's why in menopause, women live forever in an estrogen deficient state, unless, of course, you give hormones. So as I put at the bottom of that slide, the immune system, I'm in big red, because all the cells of the immune system have estrogen receptors. So estrogen influences the number, the activity, and the function of all of the immune cells. Estrogen supports, as I mentioned, the gene activation in these cells and affects all of the innate and adaptive immune cell functions. In terms of the T cells, which we'll talk about more, half of all of the activated genes in the female T cells have estrogen response elements. Now, what does that mean? The estrogen response elements are how estrogen binds to the nuclear receptor to create the effects. So basically, the T cells are really dependent on estrogen for their effects. So when we look at all of autoimmune disease, when we look at cardiovascular disease, when we look at things such as asthma and allergies, they actually have involvement with the immune system, and they have common pathways for the inflammation of the that leads to a disease. But what happens is there are disease-specific variations that shape the manifestations of these diseases. But as we can see, there are confluent pathways that become perturbed or altered that include some of the major pathways of the body that involve immune cell function. So everything now, as you've heard, I'm sure you've heard this, that all illness seems to involve chronic low level inflammation. You've heard that, I'm sure, many times, that chronic inflammation is the enemy. And so that's the immune system. Inflammation is all created by immune cells. So they all involve these common pathways like the first one there is phosphatidylinositol 3 kinase, and that's AKT. So that's one of the important cell pathways, also linked to many others that are involved in proliferation, like mTOR, and toll-like receptors and NF-kappa B signaling. So all of these different pathways are in some way altered or damaged that creates virtually all the diseases that you're seeing that are related to chronic inflammation. So virtually every disease in the body gets linked in some way to the immune system. So I put this slide in just to show you how the immune system is involved in so many things. It's not just about, like I mentioned, fighting a cold. So we think of the immune system in certain ways, but think of it in terms of every organ system, for example, cardiometabolic dysfunction. So in this cell, it shows that, for example, people who eat a Western diet, they're going to activate their COX-2 enzyme systems. They're going to have production of angiotensin II and aldosterone. They're going to have constriction of arteries and so on. And you're going to have oxidative stress and then you're going to get insulin resistance. And see, it includes all these same pathways, as I mentioned, like the phosphatidyl 3 inositol kinase pathway, mTOR pathways, all of these link together when they're not functioning properly to create all kinds of illness in the body. And here you show that it can lead to things like insulin resistance, which of course leads down the path to diabetes and fatty liver and abnormal lipid production. And here under the adipose tissue, it shows inflammation, and under the artery, it also shows increased inflammation, contraction or restriction of the artery, hypertension, atherosclerosis. So think of all of these processes as linked to the immune system. And if you look at the top along that line there, you can see where it shows estrogen. See, it shows estrogen, and then the red dotted line shows inhibitory signal. That's what that means. So you can think of it as estrogen to the rescue. Estrogen helps to mediate these pathways to prevent inflammation. So when you have the proper amount of estrogen, for example, in a healthy reproductive age female, she will have protection from oxidative stress and cardiometabolic disease, which is as it is. And as you know, women in the reproductive years have far less cardiometabolic disease compared to males, except nowadays because of poor diets, overnutrition, nutrient deficiencies, gut dysbiosis, and so on. Some of that normal paradigm is changing, and of course, not for the better. So if we now look at some of the individual cells of the innate immune system, and we can sort of run through these, and you can go back and look at these slides, we'll see that basically estrogen impacts every single cell of the innate immune system. So if we look at neutrophils, it regulates their numbers, and it involved with the production of chemokines and cytokines. So chemokines are the signals that call in the troops, that causes more immune cells to come to the scene. And it regulates genes. So basically think of estrogen as regulating the neutrophils and then the macrophages in a similar fashion. And I wanted to mention that I've mentioned the immune system is about everything. It's about every organ. It's about every illness. It really is life itself. The immune system is now recognized to be critical in every aspect of health. And in the brain, the macrophages that develop there during the fetal life are called microglia. In the gut, we have the gut immune system that's part of the neurological system of the gut that's called the enteric nervous system, and there are microglia in that system as well. So there are enteric microglia, and these are actually modifications of macrophages. They're immune cells, and they help to keep the gut working properly and the brain working properly, and estrogen controls the microglia. So think of it in menopause. Women have almost three times the incidence of Alzheimer's. We now understand that Alzheimer's is about neuroinflammation. Once again, it's about the immune system. And women have uncontrolled immune systems when they don't have enough estrogen in their brains and their microglia cannot perform properly. So you can now see how the immune system is so important and how estrogen is so key to having a healthy, properly functioning immune system in women. If we look at the dendritic cells, which I already mentioned, they are the intermediaries between the innate and the adaptive immune systems. And in females, this system is much more robust than in males. They present the antigen material to the T cells, and they do that much better than males do. And then they are very, very important in recognizing and then being able to inform the T cells when the same, we'll say, enemy shows up, so that the same antibody will be produced more quickly. And in terms of the T cells, well, now we're talking about the adaptive immune system, and estrogen modulates all of the different types of T cells that include all the CD4 cells, for example, the TH1 and 2 and TH7 and the T reg cells. Now, estrogen helps promote the development, frequency, and expansion of the T reg cells. The T regulatory cells are critical for immune health, for understanding that we are not supposed to attack ourselves. We'll call it immune tolerance. Treg cells are very important for that. And estrogen helps to regulate the Treg cells so that it downregulates the immune responses when it's not supposed to happen. And this happens through predominantly the estrogen receptor alpha. So that's important to know. So if we look at the T lymphocytes a little bit more, we see that they modulate interferon as well from the Th1 cells, and that this is also driven by estrogen receptor alpha predominantly. And look at this. They did a study with mice. They actually bred them so that they lacked the estrogen receptor alpha. So they did not, they couldn't respond to estrogen through the alpha receptor at all. And if we look down to the bottom, what did they find? An increase in serum anti-DNA antibodies. That's what you see in lupus, systemic lupus. So here we show that when you don't have proper estrogen receptor alpha functioning, or you can think of it as you don't have estrogen getting into the alpha receptor, you increase the incidence of lupus. So you can see how critical that the alpha receptor is for immune health. But look at the B cells. The B cells actually are more heavily embedded with estrogen receptor beta than the alpha. And the B cells, as I'm sure you know, are very important in producing antibodies. But when you don't have proper regulation, then you can have dysfunction and create autoantibodies, of course. And that's the basis for autoimmunity. And estrogen is very important for maintaining B cell differentiation, activity, function, survival, and expression of their genes. So now you can see that both estrogen receptor alpha and beta are very important for the T cells and the B cells. But it seems that the alpha seems to be even more critical for the development of autoimmunity. So think about it. We're giving women oral contraceptives, they're exposed to endocrine disruptors, and then of course they lose their estrogen production from the ovary in menopause. What are we doing to create a higher risk for women of developing such conditions as autoimmunity? Now that you understand the critical nature of estrogen and the immune systems, both the innate and adaptive. Well, I wanted to show you some of the things that can happen when things go wrong. I just wanted to show you the slide about endometriosis. That is an example of immune system dysfunction in females. It shows that little blue cell in the center, and it says ER alpha. That is actually a mast cell that has estrogen receptor alpha. The innate immune cells are heavily embedded with estrogen receptor alpha. The mast cells are predominantly alpha. The neutrophils, the macrophages are predominantly alpha. So that's the innate immune system. And here you have the products of the menstrual cycle that come out, the menstrual debris, and they're like looking at like necrotic tissue. And the toll-like receptors of the mast cell are seeing those. And they're saying, oh my gosh, we're getting invaded by something evil. And so the mast cells explode and release, they says degranulation releases all of their inflammatory products. And then they release as well the chemokines, which cause recruitment and activation of other innate immune cells. And then that in turn gets the dendritic cells involved, which then gets the TMB cells involved. And you get this overall out of control inflammatory response. And then you end up causing injury and feedback, which causes even more. And you get this horrible circle of dysfunction. And that is really a perfect example of how the total immune system of the female pelvis is dysregulated, creating the terrible problem of endometriosis. If we look at pregnancy and menopause, they also have their own innate issues. Pregnancy traditionally has been viewed as skewing from Th1 to Th2. It turns out it does involve that, but it's much more complicated than just that. And in fact, there is difference in terms of how the immune system of pregnancy works, looking from one trimester to the next. And this is an area of current research, and hopefully we'll understand much more about the immune system of pregnancy so that we'll be able to avert some of the major complications of pregnancy, which occur, of course, all too often. Menopause, think of it as a state of chronic inflammation. It's associated with an increase in the Th17, which are considered quite inflammatory. And it's such a problem for women in menopause because it's not really well acknowledged or recognized that menopause with the estrogen deficient state that develops is really inducive to inflammation and autoimmunity. Women in menopause actually have a much higher rate of developing rheumatoid arthritis, for example, and women with MS in menopause will sometimes have exacerbations. So, and it's related to the estrogen-mediated T regulatory cells, as I mentioned, which estrogen is very important in terms of maintaining immune cell balance and recognition of self. So what about osteoporosis? That's a very common problem of women in menopause. Well, it turns out that it really is an immune-mediated process, and that is not well appreciated. Remember, I just told you a minute ago that estrogen deficiency, when you go through menopause, creates an imbalance of Th17. And what that does is it creates more of the inflammatory cytokines that are pro-osteoclastogenic. So these are cytokines that are produced actually by osteoblasts, and they increase bone resorption. And these are mediated through such things as tumor necrosis factor alpha, interleukin-6, and the Rankl. And these create bone loss. It turns out that estrogen deficiency is very important in terms of leading to this inflammatory state within the bone. And you have increase in the production also of tumor necrosis factor producing T cells. And that is another osteoclastogenic product. So I want you to think differently about menopause. Think of it as a state of chronic low-level inflammation. And a lot of the conditions that you've thought of as wear and tear or just old age are really part of the immune system becoming dysregulated in females. Females have much higher rates of osteoporosis and osteoarthritis, which we now also recognize as a state of inflammation out of control within the joints. It's not just about wear and tear at all. It's really about the immune system. Well, I mentioned several times about estrogen inducing T regulatory cells, the Treg cells. Well, how does it do it? Well, actually, one of the ways it does it is through its intermediary called nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is produced in many sites in the body, in the gut, and also in arteries, and there are certain enzyme systems called nitric oxide synthase. And nitric oxide synthase has both a neuronal or an endothelial component. These are estrogen dependent. Estrogen promotes the function of this enzyme to produce nitric oxide, which is a gas which is very important for many functions in the body, including the immune system, which is often not recognized. Often it's just talked about in terms of cardiovascular well-being, which of course involves the immune system as well. So I wanted to bring this up because, as I talked about earlier, birth control pills are given to over 90% of women. That is true. Over 90% of women in their reproductive years will be on birth control pills, oral contraceptives, sometimes for decades. And what are we doing when we're giving women birth control pills? Well, it turns out that birth control pills lower the rate of production of nitric oxide. And this, of course, then creates cardiovascular risk, but not just cardiovascular risk, because it's involving the immune system, which involves everything in the body. It increases pro-inflammatory markers. And it increases autoimmune disease. This is very important if you're going to give real proper informed consent to your young female patients when they go on birth control pills. And what about giving them to young teens who really have still not even fully developed? It's now been shown that birth control pills, oral contraceptives, increase the risk of developing autoimmune diseases. And the ones that have been documented are multiple sclerosis, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, lupus, and IC, which is interstitial cystitis, which is now recognized as probably it is an autoimmune condition. Birth control pills also alter their circadian rhythm, which we're going to discuss as a huge part of immune health. Now, I want to touch on another area of the immune system, which is going to involve protection by the macrophages, by the innate immune system. It starts by you understanding the term autophagy. Auto is oneself and phagy is to eat. So what this involves is cells regenerating themselves from the inside by digesting their internal organelles that are damaged, misfolded proteins, and also invading microorganisms, which we call xenophagy, and then dissolving them, and then as far as the organelles are concerned, to regrow new healthy ones. What happens is you have these lysosomes and you have these autophagosomes that develop around the organelles that need to be digested and then reconstructed. And so I consider lysosomes to be sort of the recycling bins of cells so that you can then dissolve and then recreate new healthy organs within the cell. And this can be life-saving. And what I'm going to tell you, you're not going to be surprised, estrogen modulates this system and it gives females, once again, a survival advantage. We are actually at war at all times. I don't know if you think about it, but we are always at war with invading pathogens. These bacteria, viruses, of course, you can go into other kinds of pathogens. You know, it could be a parasite and so forth. These, we're always being attacked, and our bodies have very robust defense mechanisms to try to destroy these invaders. And the way that it works is through xenophagy. So what happens is if we take a bacteria here and then it's recognized by the cell as a foreign invader, and these are the immune cells like a macrophage and the toll-like receptors, and it creates a membrane around it that isolates it, and then it fuses with the lysosome, which is like the dissolving recycling bin, and it dissolves these invaders. As you can see in that last circle, they're looking like they're crumbling, they're dissolving. So this is how the immune cells get rid of invaders. This is an estrogen-mediated function, and females are much better at xenophagy than males are. We have more robust macrophages, we produce more toll-like receptors, we are better at gobbling up bacteria, and so we, females, have a higher survival rate from sepsis and infections than males. This is mediated both through estrogen receptor beta. Also, you know, there's some alpha involved because these are the innate immune system, and also the non-receptors for estrogen, the estrogen-related receptors, which are not involving estrogen as the ligand, but something else, but estrogen is required for this function. And estrogen is very key to creating the autophagosome and the formation of them in the macrophages. And it turns out that phagocytic ability and the cytotoxicity of these macrocytes and how they gobble up bacteria is very circadian. So our immune cells are on clocks. They function differently at different times of the day, and they are more active, particularly in the early part of the day. After all, that's when you'll be going out, you're waking up, you're going to be more prone to catching something or getting injured. So our immune systems are very circadian, and it's regulated by estrogen. So it turns out as well, because of autophagy, which is an estrogen-mediated event, females are better able to survive sepsis from endotoxemia. So it's not just killing the bacteria, but living through the toxic shock that can occur when cells start to die. Estrogen helps cells to rejuvenate from within to more likely survive from a total septic experience. And here's a study in rats that showed that when they took out their ovaries and then they gave them lipopolysaccharides and created a great deal of endotoxic shock and a great deal of multi-organ damage, that when they gave them estrogen, before they did all this to them, it really dampened down the damage. So estrogen helps for survival. So if you remember, it's more imperative for females to survive, to raise the children than males. Nature gave females this unbelievable, robust immune system with the capabilities that are magnified for autophagy and xenophagy and recognizing invaders and so forth, so that we will survive to raise our children. And it turns out that it's not just having estrogen, but it's how much estrogen. So estradiol has a bipotential effect on monocytes and macrophages. When you have very low doses, it's actually pro-inflammatory, while high doses tend to be anti-inflammatory. So if you think of a menstrual cycle, when you have a period, that is when estrogen is the lowest, and having a period is an inflammatory process. You actually induce inflammatory prostaglandins. That's why women get cramps, and that's what causes the expulsion and cramping and expulsion of the uterine lining. And then when you have pre-ovulatory, when you have the spike of estrogen that induces ovulation, that is the most anti-inflammatory time of the menstrual cycle. And that helps to regulate the immune cells so that they don't attack the sperm that hopefully will come in and get the female pregnant at that time. So let's consider this. When we treat menopausal women, someone came up with this idea that we should give them the lowest possible dose. Why is that? Now that you know that the lowest possible dose is going to be the most inflammatory dose, that doesn't really make sense, does it? Now, I want to touch on another huge area of the immune system, which is the gut microbiome, which, of course, we now know is where there are trillions of microbes that really have a huge impact on our immune system. And a healthy microbiome with a healthy barrier function, motility, is going to lead to reduced inflammation and metabolic health, reproductive health, mental health, immune health, because they're all one and the same thing. Our body sinks and swims as a whole, and we need a healthy gut microbiome. When you don't have a healthy gut microbiome, you get reduced Treg cells, you get systemic inflammation, you get increase in allergy, autoimmunity, infections, and cancer. And not surprisingly, it turns out that estrogen is related to a healthy gut microbiome. And in fact, as we'll touch on, estrogen is so important that it has its own microbiome called the estrobilome. So major impacts on the microbiome, I'm sure you know many of these. I just want to make sure that you know that estrogen is a major impact on the microbiome, and males and females have different gut microbiomes. In fact, when they have taken fecal transplants from males and given them to females, the females actually behave differently and they start making more testosterone. It's really quite amazing. So males and females are different in pretty much every way, it seems, including our gut microbiomes, which have tremendous impact on our immune systems and why we are different in so many ways with our immune health. The bacteria, the microbes, I'm sure you know, have many, many functions. I don't need to tell you about that, but they are very key to maintaining a healthy, robust immune system as well. They are about teaching us immune tolerance when we are children. And here, I love this slide of the complex world of the gut, because it shows how you have the microbes and they create the intermediary products, their metabolites, the short chain fatty acids. The top of the area shows the mucus layer and a healthy gut. And at the bottom, there is unresolved inflammation and a compromised gut barrier. And you can even see the little dendritic cells that I've talked about to you as the interfaces between the innate and the adaptive immune system, and that they are like our own little antenna that sense what's going on. And you can see that little finger that's going through the barrier, which is, you know, the tight junctions. They're supposed to be tight, but not perfect, not totally sealed, because you need to have these little fingers of the dendrites going through and seeing what's going on within the gut lumen. And also fatty acids and some of the short chain fatty acids can actually diffuse through those those junctions as well. And you can see in the Golf, the gut-associated lymphoid tissue, the lymphatic tissue that is on the right side, that's in pink, that shows all those immune cells and shows the toll-like receptors and so forth, with the, it shows the dendritic cell communicating with another one of the immune cells. And it shows the lymphoid follicles, like the Peyer's patches, which are so important in terms of making estrogen and controlling the immune system. And as I just mentioned, the Peyer's patches and the lymphoid follicles in the gut actually are estrogen producing, because estrogen is so key to regulating and managing the immune system of the gut-associated lymphoid system. So as I just mentioned, estrogen is very key to managing the inflammatory responses in the gut, and estrogen is made in the gut. And that is where the most prevalent, the most prominent of all the immunoglobulins, immunoglobulin A, is made. And I'm sure you've all know of the importance of immunoglobulin A, that it's very important for immune surveillance, and it is controlled, once again, by estrogen. And immunoglobulin A is a non-inflammatory antibody which specializes in mucosal protection. It helps to create a sense, a state of hypo-low responsiveness to commensal, the good bacteria within the gut, while remaining active with surveillance against pathogens that can come in into the gut. So all of these systems that are regulated by immunoglobulin A and the communication with the other cells of the immune system, and the secreted mucus layer, where you have antimicrobial proteins and IgA binding into this mucus layer, which are secreted by goblet cells, all of these systems are related to estrogen. So in the absence of estrogen, or in the presence of endocrine disruptors, and you know that we swallow these things all the time in our food, these endocrine disruptors, these chemicals, and of course, as I mentioned, birth control pills are endocrine disruptors as well. I want to make that clear. Birth control pills have no hormones. They are actually officially, by the U.S. toxicology website, they are endocrine disruptors. In this next slide, it just shows another picture showing the beautiful symphony, the synchrony of the immune system and the gut, with the Peyer's patches, where you have the gut-associated lymphoid tissue with all the regulatory cells of the the adaptive immune system. And then you have the other areas that include the innate immune system. And then you have the cells of the enterocytes, the lining cells, and you have the immunoglobulin A that is being produced by the B cells and the plasma cells, and how all of this is so beautifully orchestrated in a healthy person. And for a female to have a healthy functioning immune system, which involves a healthy gut, she needs to have physiologic normal levels of estrogen. And as I mentioned, estrogen is so important to the gut and to every other part of the body that the gut actually has its own set of microbes designed just to metabolize estrogen, called the estrobilome. And we don't have time to go into that in great depth. I just wanted to mention that so that you realize how important the gut is in terms of estrogen metabolism. And it's so important that we now know that when you have an abnormal estrobilome, when you don't have a healthy gut microbiome, you actually increase your risk of breast cancer. And they have found when postmenopausal women were diagnosed with estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, they have a less diverse fecal microbiome and they have an unhealthy gut microbial environment. So maintaining a healthy gut microbial environment is very important for lowering the risk of these postmenopausal cancers like breast cancer, uterine cancer, endometrial cancer, and colon cancer. So here it just shows that when you have estrobilome dysfunction, gut dysbiosis, look at all the problems that ensue. These are all related to the immune system. They're all like different sides of the same coin. This is a very multi-sided coin here. It's probably more like some dice. And this does not include autoimmunity. They left that off of this slide, but we should put in another arrow for that. But you can see how the gut is involved in everything that has to do with immune health, and that every organ system in the body is in some way related. So I just want to touch briefly on the circadian rhythm, which I've also just mentioned. It turns out that the toll-like receptor signaling, which is how the body perceives invaders and toxins and so forth, is tightly controlled by the circadian clock. And it's the whole immune system is very circadian, and it prepares the body to be at most readiness during the time of the day, which is the early part of the day, when most probable there could be some kind of invasion or infection. And this is a very, very key point. And it's turned out that when women have autoimmune disease or cancers, that they have been found to have circadian disruption. The circadian rhythm is key to immune health, and females are more prone to circadian rhythm dysfunctions than males. That is one of the reasons why females have twice the incidence of insomnia and depression as do males, which are both linked to circadian rhythm dysfunction and immune system dysfunction. In terms of the circadian rhythm, you have a master clock and you have a lot of peripheral clocks. Every cell in the body has its own clock. The master clock sits in the hypothalamus on top of the optic nerve, sensing light and dark and also getting some information from the nutrient sensors. I'm showing this slide just to show you how complex it is. This is actually relating to reproduction, but as you now know, reproduction and metabolic health are one. Immune health, reproductive health, immune health, all related together in one healthy person, or hopefully that's a healthy person. So it just shows that SCN stands for suprachiasmatic nucleus. That's the master clock in the brain. This shows estrogen receptor beta. It actually also has some estrogen receptor alpha. Estrogen is key to regulating the circadian rhythm. And that is why women who have varying fluctuating levels of estrogen, and of course, menopause and exposure to endocrine disruptors, are more prone to circadian rhythm dysfunction and adverse events relating to it, including immune dysfunction. We know that women who work night shifts, for example, they're like nurses. I'm sure that some of you have worked many night shifts. I'm an OBGYN. I spent 25 years doing deliveries in the middle of the night. And then I gave that up 10 years ago because it was literally killing me. And unfortunately, women who live in a world of circadian dysfunction, whether through working night shift or traveling across time zones all the time, or just living the life of a jet setter and staying up really late at different odd hours and eating at odd hours, are more prone to all of the immune dysfunctions, autoimmune disease, depression, anxiety, and particularly breast cancer. So we know without a doubt that proper circadian rhythm is necessary for proper immune health, and females more than males are more prone to circadian rhythm dysfunction. Everything in the body is on a timer. Everything is based on the 24-hour rotation of the earth, and it's all about survival. Everything in our bodies has evolved for reproduction and survival for the purpose of reproduction. And we're not going to go over this, but I love this slide. You can look at it at your leisure. It just shows the amazing interplay between the circadian rhythm, the immune system, both in terms of the innate immune system and the adaptive immune system, how it changes through the different times of the day, and how when you have circadian disruption from sleep loss or jet lag or shift work or aging, loss of hormones, they don't put in there, but we should put in there ourselves, because we know endocrine disruptors, that it creates a state of low-grade systemic inflammation and compromised adaptive immunity, increased autoimmunity, allergic responses, decreased tumor surveillance, so more risk for cancer. So look at this at your leisure. It just brings it all together. So we now know that women who have rheumatoid arthritis tend to have more severe symptoms in the morning. That's just one clear example of circadian rhythm. Because as I mentioned, in the morning, you have a more robust immune system and more inflammatory cytokines are produced in the morning. But don't think it's all one directional. If you have a great deal of inflammation for whatever reason, that will also disrupt the circadian rhythm. So chronic inflammation will disrupt the circadian rhythm, as well as loss of estrogen. So it's bidirectional, and it can trigger a whole variety of immune-mediated diseases. And as you know now, pretty much every disease is immune-mediated. Loss of estrogen, endocrine disruptors, I told you, are circadian rhythm disruptors if you don't have them. And as I mentioned, there's clocks everywhere. I just wanted to show you there are clocks in our gut microbiome. And it turns out that our gut microbes are also circadian. And we have different microbiomes at different times of the day and night. And it turns out that some of these microbes are actually sensitive to melatonin and swarm in the presence of melatonin and trigger a whole cascade of signaling agents that help to get the timing of the microbes in the gut and the timing of the clocks in the liver synchronized. That's why sleep is so important and melatonin is so important. You need to have melatonin for so many reasons. And now you know another one on your list is that it helps to program the proper time of the day and night into our gut microbes so that our gut microbiome circadian rhythm is on the beat, because if you have a dysfunctional microbiome circadian rhythm, you're going to have a dysfunctional circadian rhythm of your liver, which is going to lead to metabolic chaos and immune dysfunction. So the take-home message is that in general, females who are healthy at every age have a stronger immune response than do males. We females are more likely to survive an epidemic, an injury, sepsis, and we know that because of our brain immune system, we're more likely to have less damage from traumatic brain injury at a younger age. But we are not invincible. We live in a world of endocrine disruptors and hormonal dysfunction, chemicals, pharmaceuticals, and of course, aging with menopause. And as a result, we are more prone to many serious immune dysfunctions, including cancers of our reproductive organs and autoimmunity. We are much better at clearing pathogens, but we also run the risk of things going very wrong when we live in the world that we live in, where we are so challenged. So I just want to quickly go over some of the ways that you can help your females now that you know the problems and how different we are from males. We want to maintain healthy estrogen levels as long as possible. And you can actually delay menopause a little bit with phytonutrients, polyphenols, lots of antioxidants. We want to avoid endocrine disruptors as much as possible. You already know I'm not in favor of oral contraceptives, but of course we do need to find reliable birth control. Think of it this way. Humans are the only member of the animal kingdom that actually tries to control its reproductive functions. And it's not easy, because once you understand that the prime directive of life is reproduction, messing with it is messing with every other system of our body. So we definitely have to come up with better alternatives. We need to try to maintain our healthy gut microbiome and circadian rhythm. In order to do that, we definitely want to, as I mentioned, avoid chemical endocrine disruptors, BPA, especially during the critical phases. We now know that exposure to, for example, BPA or organophosphates, which are pesticides, at young ages predispose to premenopausal breast cancer. So we definitely want to have a healthy immune system. That means avoiding these chemical endocrine disruptors, because anything that messes with our estrogen is going to mess with our immune system. We want to feed our microbiome. So I recommend starting for a few months with pretty close to a vegan diet with very high fiber, all natural, organic, and unprocessed. So we got to feed those microbes. They love fiber. And healthy fats as well, of course, and lots of probiotic-rich foods. We don't need a whole lot of protein unless you're a weightlifter, but you can get plenty from beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds. And I want to avoid all processed food. Alcohol is a neurotoxin. It's a gut toxin. It's a liver toxin. Please, of course, no alcohol. I also recommend that you get a 13-hour fast at night. There are studies that show you have about a 70% reduction in breast cancer when you get 13 hours of fasting overnight from dinner to breakfast, not from a late dinner to a late lunch. It has to be that you have breakfast by 10 o'clock in the morning, please. You don't get much benefit by going over a 13-hour overnight fast. Try to eat at the same time every day. What we're trying to do is to get our circadian rhythm in beat, in line with the 24-hour rotation of the earth. Eating a large, healthy breakfast is actually beneficial. There's quite a bit of data that shows that. And trying to do some periodic fasting, I use the fasting mimicking diet. It actually acts as a gut reboot and a circadian reboot. We can also use some supplements like resveratrol, alpha-lipoic acid, berberine, exercise. They are fasting mimetics, so I use them very frequently. They help to act as regenerative. They actually help to promote autophagy or cellular regeneration, as I described when I told you about autophagy. Exercise actually improves the gut microbial biodiversity, and that may be one of the major ways that exercise actually is beneficial to our immune system. But there's nothing that exercise does not help, so everyone should get exercise. So in essence, to have a healthy immune system as a female, we have to accept the challenges that we are faced. We have wonderful, beautiful, robust immune systems, but in a world where we're faced with endocrine disruptors, the inevitability of menopause, chemicals like birth control pills, lots of stress, immune systems that are attacked by circadian rhythm dysfunction, too much light, and so forth, we are challenged. And that is why with our gut dysbiosis and so on, autoimmunity is rampant. But to try to have the path to immune health, we need to have light at the appropriate time. We need to have love and social activity. We need to eat and sometimes not eat. We need to do everything we can to maintain a healthy gut microbiome, circadian clock, and to live according to the way our bodies were designed to be. And when we do that, we have the opportunity to be healthy ourselves and to give health and optimize the opportunity for a long and happy health span to each of our patients. So with that, I'd like to thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Gersh, for leading that informative discussion. Thanks, everyone, and we look forward to joining us again for future presentations.